The Pastor's Heart and Dominic Steele, and we're here on Facebook every Tuesday at 2 o'clock. You can catch us later on podcast, on Facebook or on YouTube, or subscribe to our email list at thepastorsheart.net. And look, thanks for those who are financially supporting us by going to patreon.com/thepastorsheart. We exist to sharpen, encourage and strengthen senior pastors particularly, but actually all those in Christian ministry as we engage in our common mission of seeking the lost and building up the saints. Today, a threat to Christian ministry, a colossal blow to religious freedom. Legislation is being promoted in the Parliament of the Australian state of Victoria by that state's governing party. It's called the Change or Suppression Conversion Practices Prohibition Bill, and it carries with it consequences of 10 years imprisonment for anyone engaging in change of suppression practices. One of our guests today, Murray Campbell, has written, "This is the most significant threat to religious freedom in Victoria in living memory. The current government has been slowly removing religious freedoms for a number of years, but nothing quite like this." So today we talk to Murray Campbell. He's the pastor of Melbourne's influential Mentone Baptist Church, also to Chris Duke, who pastors Clifton Hill, Essendon Presbyterian Churches, and who chairs the Victorian Presbyterian Church's Church and Nation Committee. And also Neil Foster is with us. Neil is Associate Professor of Law at Newcastle University and the author of the Law and Religion Australia.blog. And look, a disclosure from me, I am on the committee of the Sydney-based evangelical group Liberty Christian Ministries, and also the new Sydney Anglican Pastoral Ministry, which is serving same-sex attracted Christians and those with gender incongruence, that's called Living Faith. Now, Neil, can we start with you? The proposed law that's been put to the Victorian Parliament last week, it is long and complex. It's been through a first and second reading stage, and I'm imagining will be debated at the start of next year. But Premier Andrews has said cruel and bigoted practices that seek to change or suppress a person's sexual orientation or gender identity will soon be stamped out across Victoria thanks to the new laws. Now, I take it there are some parts that you'd have no objections to, but some parts of the law that are going to, proposed law, that are going to have big problems for faith communities and faith leaders in Victoria.
Well, Dominic, it's interesting. I was reflecting on this and thinking, oh, I should find something good to say about this legislation. But I just think it's legislation that is responding to a problem that doesn't exist anymore in broad terms. Most people clearly would reject the idea that we should be inserting electrodes into people's brains or somehow trying to change them against their will in terms of their sexual desires. Nobody in Australia would suggest that that's a good thing. And yet that's not what this bill is targeted at. Since those sorts of things are not really happening anymore, mainstream psychologists are not engaging in these terrible practices, then you've got to ask what the purpose of the legislation is. And the purpose of the legislation seems to be to target Christian, and not just Christian, religious groups who have a traditional view of sexual behaviour. And so, honestly, there's very little to say good about the bill, insofar as it stops those horrible practices from ever happening again, that would be fine. And if it was confined to something that's compulsory, something that uses over-the-top and oppressive medical procedures, yes, that would be a good thing. But, for example, the bill criminalises or makes it unlawful to engage in the change or suppression practices, even if the person consents to them, even if someone comes and says, I want to help. So very hard to see very much good about this law at all, actually.
Murray, is that your, Murray Campbell from Mentone Baptist Church, is that your reading as well?
It is. I'm not a lawyer. I'm a pastor of a church, but I have been following this debate very closely over the last 2 to 3 years. And so my thinking is similar to Neil. And the first time I ever heard of conversion practices was about 3 or 4 years ago when a journalist was talking to me and he asked, what did I think? And it was the first time I'd ever come across it. And I think if we're wanting to have a conversation about some awful, wrong and archaic practices that a few religious groups were engaging in many, many years ago, then I'm happy to have that conversation. You know, shock therapy, aversion therapy, And I think I acknowledge that these things happened, though rarely, but they did happen years ago, and I wouldn't want anyone being subject to that. And the government last year, in a report that they wrote, they acknowledged there are narrow and broad definitions of conversion practice, and they wanted to pursue a broad definition. And so it's not only trying to prohibit those practices which, as far as I'm aware, are not being done anywhere anymore anyway, but to include what we would consider a normal, classical understandings of the Christian faith when it comes to prayer and to conversation.
Chris Duke, if I could draw you in here, is it your understanding that the current proposal of the bill would potentially make it illegal to just read out in church Romans chapter 1, 1 Corinthians 6, 1 Timothy 1 in a church in Victoria, or even as far as reading out Mark 10 or Mark 19, where the Lord Jesus is talking about in the beginning God created the male and female? Does it go that far?
From my point of view, I think that that's not necessarily going to stop pastors from reading those passages out, but I think that some may interpret those passages and see that they have potential for somebody getting upset and drawing us into potential legal arguments about these and maybe even further issues around just proclaiming and reading those passages and even preaching and teaching on them. At this stage, it's unclear, and the memorandum of understanding doesn't really give us a clear basis on what they actually mean. But it certainly gives the impression that could be a problem in the future.
And although the memorandum also includes that a conversation may be considered a conversion practice. And so a conversation with a faith leader can be, that's not in the bill itself, but it is in the memorandum. And so what you need to do, I think, is to look at not only what the bill states, but at what the memorandum suggests, and then all these accompanying reports and publications that the government have been providing for the last 12 to 18 months. And when you read those reports, it's pretty clear that they're wanting to target again, not that just that those narrow and dreadful practices from a generation ago, but indeed to stamp down and to discourage conversations that include expressing a biblical vision for human sexuality.
In relation to the question about, for example, a sermon or reading out of the Bible, we need to be careful, I think, to not overstate the effect of the drafting. And in fact, somebody sent me very kindly a copy of the another document associated with the bill, which is a tabling of what's called a statement of compatibility with human rights. And when you read between the lines, not between the lines, when you carefully read the way that is framed, it does suggest that they don't want to target sermons. That particular statement says, although broad, the definition has been designed to exclude conduct that is not directed at an individual to reduce its impact on religious practices such as sermons. Now, that's in the statement that was filed by the minister of compatibility with human rights. And so the trouble is, it's not obvious on the face of the bill that that's an accepted limitation on what the legislation is about. And so I think many people are rightly concerned, well, will not preaching, if it's directed at telling people the Bible's view of sexual activity, which is that sex is designed for only between a man and a woman in marriage, will not that be, you know, interpreted as trying to change someone or suppress someone's sexual orientation? So there's documents you can find, such as this statement of compatibility, which say, oh, well, it's not designed to impact sermons. And they even go to say it's not designed to impact general discussions of religious beliefs that aim to explain these beliefs. Nevertheless, there's a very fine line between I'm going to lead a Bible study, tell you what the Bible's view is on sex, into, oh, you know, well, I'm a same-sex attracted person in the group and I want some assistance in obeying the Bible. Can you help me? That's a very fine line, and it will make it very hard for people who want to teach the views of the Bible and people in other religious traditions who want to teach their views to make sure they're not crossing that line.
That explanation that you've just given us there, Neil, that wasn't clear at all to me from the reading of either the legislation or the explanatory memorandum. But so I feel like if I'm confused, others are going to be massively confused on that topic as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. The fact is that I had to dig around into the minutiae of you know, the pages of Hansard to find this statement of compatibility. It's buried in there. It is there, and I'll try and put it up on my blog at some stage. But on the face of it, the legislation could cover those sorts of things, like sermons, like leading Bible studies, talking about Romans 1. And I just think it's bad legislation when you have to resort to these subsidiary statements made in Parliament. There should be clarity, absolute clarity. And one of the problems with the legislation is that even though, as I said before, I think this is targeted at religious groups, there's nobody else doing these things other than allegedly religious groups. There's no recognition in the bill of religious freedom. There's no recognition that this is a value that needs to be balanced. All we have is a very ambiguous and broad statement that the bill is meant to be compatible with the Charter of Human Rights that's in force in Victoria. And you have to get to the Minister's explanatory memorandum where she says, oh, well, okay, we recognise religious freedom. But honestly, it's really very much put to one side and ignored in this bill. And so that, I think, Victorian people should be saying to their governments, look, we've got a Charter of Human Rights. What's this is all about? When it's meant to protect religious freedom.
It doesn't allow, as Neil's pointed out, doesn't allow for a person to, if they want to seek counselling in this area, even if they give consent, that's considered to be suppressing suppressing, and it's prohibited under this legislation. So just when somebody gives consent, they don't have the right to actually get that. And the person giving that counsel or even just a prayer, they'll find themselves in trouble with this legislation.
So just to be clear, that preaching is not mentioned in the bill, and so there is ambiguity, and Neil's been very helpful in how he's explained that. Prayer is mentioned as a form of conversion or suppression practice in the bill itself.
So play it out for me. If the bill goes through unamended, what's going to happen when a young Christian person who's experiencing feelings of same-sex attraction comes to talk to their pastor, comes to talk to a faith leader about these unwanted feelings, unwanted temptations that they're experiencing, where do we go from there?
There are ways of reading the legislation which would protect the right to do that. One could say, for example, in telling someone and encouraging someone to behave in a way that's consistent with biblical norms, that you are not intending to change their fundamental orientation. Accepting that someone may experience same-sex attraction, obviously many people experience heterosexual attraction who are not allowed, according to biblical norms, to express that in acts of sexual intercourse outside marriage. And so the pastor could say, just as I would say to a young heterosexual bloke who said, and I feel like I need to sleep with my girlfriend, I would say, I'm sorry, that's contrary to the Bible and you ought to not do that, then that would be the sort of counselling that could be given to someone in this situation. And one could argue that under the legislation that does not amount to an attempt to change or suppress someone's sexual orientation. But the problem that rises is that in some pieces of legislation, sexual activity and behaviour has been equated with sexual orientation, and the view has been taken that someone who is same-sex attracted absolutely must be able to express that in sexual activity with someone from the same sex, otherwise they're being suppressed in some way. So that's the debate that will be around in this area, I think, if that sort of thing happens. And the other thing to point out, of course, and we haven't had time to go into the nitty-gritty of the bill, is that the criminal offences require serious harm or harm to be committed, shown and proven to somebody, to have happened to somebody as a result of these practices. And so the normal criminal standard of beyond reasonable doubt will apply. You'll have to show, if a person says, I'm suffering a long-term psychological condition as a result of this counselling, then certainly that will have to be proven on the criminal standard of proof and all those sorts of things. So it will be hard to do that. But even if you don't look at the criminal offences in the legislation, the civil regime that's set up by the law is also very intrusive and gives the commission in Victoria very great powers to investigate whether there's a sort of systematic teaching that might lead to the view, really, to be blunt, the view that homosexual activity is sinful and contrary to God's will. And so I think that's also something to be concerned about, the powers that are given to the Human Rights Commission in those circumstances.
And the Human Rights Commission has the power to request copies of sermons and teaching material as well. Mm.
Yes, I think that's right. So, and the one of the suggestions that's been made to me is that perhaps some of the harsher aspects of the criminal legislation part of this regime might be toned down in passage through Parliament on the basis that the civil regime would be acceptable. But I don't think the civil regime is a good idea either, because it's a very intrusive type of, gives very intrusive powers to conduct wide-ranging investigations of what's being taught in churches. And unfortunately, I think that is going to be a bad thing.
I'd actually be arguing that God's word is good for you and good for my same-sex attracted friend, good for my friend with gender dysphoria. And so far from harm, the intent of the Christian pastor is actually to be a blessing to people. Murray, do you want to speak on that?
Sure. I mean, that's right. The gospel of Jesus Christ is good news. And it's good news for everyone who comes to understand and to believe. And so when I'm preaching, when I'm pastoring people and engaging with people, I'm not trying to change anyone's sexual orientation. I don't believe that the Bible says that when you become a Christian, your sexual orientation is going to change. And so in terms of what Christians do believe and practice and teach, we're not saying become a Christian and your sexual orientation will be automatically different at all. Now, we do know that there are some people whose orientation changes over time when they become a Christian or with age and maturity. But that often does not happen. And so what the Bible does teach is that when we come to faith in Jesus, we want to be sanctified. That is, we want our lives to please God. We want our sexual practices to be in accord with God's purposes. And that means sex is reserved for the marriage covenant between a man and a woman. And so the aim for the Christian, no matter what your sexual orientation is, it is to be holy, to be godly. And so I think the issue in the bill, in part, for me as a pastor, is not trying to change someone's sexual orientation, but is this language of suppression. And does that mean if I am praying for someone, if someone says, can you pray for me that my life is going to be godly and pleasing to Jesus, am I suppressing them by praying a prayer that they are going to be godly and so not act out on sexual desires outside of that marriage covenant between a man and a woman? And so that's some of my concerns. And I'm also concerned for people in my church and in other churches and people in the community who may come and say, you know, we're wrestling with these issues. We want to have some conversations. What's the Christian point of view? And there are people out there who may be fearful or apprehensive now. That these, can we have these conversations? And it's as though that the idea of conversion is a one-way street now, and that both the Premier and the Attorney General in their rhetoric have made that really clear, that they oppose not only the practices but the ideas behind the practices. And so for someone who's saying, I am struggling with, say, gender dysphoria, the government is saying, well, there's only one route for you, and you are to convert. And that may not be the best thing for that adult, for that child, whoever it is.
Can I ask, Chris, what conversations have you had with other faith leaders, perhaps with the Muslims, other groups who are also concerned about this proposed legislation?
Well, we've just opened up dialogue with the Muslim group, and I'm actually meeting with them. So just to see what their views are. I think they're concerned about it. They're just caught up with it. And they're just starting to come to understand what this legislation is about. And we're just interested to know what they think. Look, as we know, in the Christian community, there are varied views about around these issues, and some denominations will embrace it, and others, such as our own denomination, will, we're at the other end of the spectrum, I suppose. And, you know, we just feel that we don't have that liberty at the moment, if this is passed, I think it is designed to inhibit our freedom in the way in which we present the gospel. But at the same time, I hope and trust that it won't inhibit us, but it's certainly going to have that effect. Our Attorney General here in Victoria has basically said that they want to abolish these practices, so-called practices, but they also want to abolish anyone who has the views. So they want to abolish the views. So that is, in one sense, suppressing religious liberty.
Your pastor's heart on all of this, Murray, what have your feelings and emotions been through this journey?
Mixed. I think it's a great opportunity for Christians to explain and to share what we do believe about the gospel, the good news of Jesus, and what the Bible does and doesn't say about human sexuality. I think it's a great opportunity for us to reaffirm that we believe every single person is made in the image of God, and no matter how they understand their sexuality or gender, and that means they have inherent worth and dignity, and they need to be loved and honoured. And at the same time, we want to keep saying that the gospel is good news, and we want to persuade people that it is good news. So it's a great opportunity to do that. I think also there are a lot of Christians, pastors and denominational leaders even, who are fearful of this bill, apprehensive. And I think they're fearful of how it will come across if they speak up publicly. And so I think they're, at the moment, preferring to remain quiet. I don't think that's an option, because I think there are very real ramifications for churches. And I think we do need to speak up. It's unlikely that the bill will change significantly before it's voted on next year. That's my sense, just looking at the numbers in the upper house, especially in the Victorian Parliament. But I think it is a good opportunity for us to be clear and to keep speaking. And there may come a cost with that. And I think it's important for us to share that and to explain that to our congregations. So there's some of the thoughts and the feelings and that are, I guess, going through my mind. But I know the Lord Jesus is good and he's true, and we put our faith in him, not in governments. But we do try to, and we continue to pray for our government. We do it at Mentone all the time, for our Victorian government. But we do want to speak up and say, hey, you've got this wrong. This is overreach. You haven't understood these issues, and please correct it. So there are some things that we agree with you, but it's important for you to understand where you got it wrong, and we would like these mistakes, if they are mistakes, if not conscious decisions, we would like them to be amended.
Final word, Neil Foster.
One of the things that's deeply concerning is what's said in the Minister's second reading speech about an example, a specific example she gives about what will be caught by the bill. She says a person going to a religious leader seeking advice on their feelings of same-sex attraction and the religious leader telling them that they are broken and should live a celibate life for the purpose of changing or suppressing their same-sex attraction. Now, that's deeply disturbing. Maybe that language of broken isn't something we would use all the time, but the Bible does refer to a problem between humanity and God. It talks about the fact that God requires a certain standard of behaviour from people. It talks about his wonderful act of saving us, but the fact is those sorts of things that the minister talks about are found in the Bible, and it seems very deeply disturbing that she's concerned that those sorts of things would fall under the prohibitions in this legislation.
Neil, Murray, Chris, thank you very much for being with us this afternoon on The Pastor's Heart. That's Neil Foster, Associate Professor of Law at Newcastle University and also the author of the Law and Religion Australia blog. Murray Campbell, the pastor of Melbourne's Mentone Baptist Church, and Chris Duke, who pastors Clifton Hill and Essendon Presbyterian Churches and also who chairs the Victorian Presbyterian Church's Church and Nation Committee. You've been with us on The Pastor's Heart, and we'll look forward to your company next Tuesday afternoon.
Hey, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, we would love it if you could hop over to the Apple Podcasts app and give us a rating and review. That helps us in the rankings and lets other people discover The Pastor's Heart. And again, if you are able to help us out by being a financial partner, go to our Patreon link, patreon.com/thepastorsheart.